Now, David Grimm, editor of Science's online daily news site, Science Now, joins us to talk about the latest science news. Hi, David.
Hey, Rob.
So what stories do you have for us today?
Well, Rob, we're going to talk about a dung beetle that has stopped eating dung and turned into a killer. We're going to look at a study that's trying to figure out whether eating less improves memory. And finally, we're going to discuss the real purpose of Triceratops horns.
Well, let's start with the dung beetle that's turned into a killer. No feces for this species, Dave?
Quite. Rob, as you can probably guess from the name, dung beetles have a reputation for eating dung. In fact, until this study was published, biologists thought that's pretty much all they ate. But there has been some evidence that they also eat rotting fruit, and some of them have even been found dining on dead insects. But what's unusual about this new dung beetle species, which is called Deltochilum valgum, is that this species seems to have abandoned the dung-eating lifestyle completely and turned into a killer.
What's it kill? What's it eat?
Well, this team of researchers went out into the deep Peruvian rainforest, and there's hundreds of dung beetle species in this rainforest, and they set traps with dung, and they set traps with rotting fruit, but they also set traps with live millipedes, because the lead researcher on this project had sometimes observed dung beetles feasting on dead millipedes. So he said, I wonder if they go after live millipedes. And what they found after 11 months of setting these traps was, first of all, they recorded 132 species of dung beetle, and they recorded the behavior of 100,000 individuals. And they found that, as they suspected, most of them were either eating dung or they were eating the rotten fruit. But this one species exclusively went after the live millipedes. And they didn't just go after them. They went after them in a pretty gory way. These dung beetles have these serrated heads, and what they were doing with their heads was using them to pry between the segments of the millipede, and this would split the millipede apart, and then they would feed on the millipede's insides. So a pretty graphic strategy, and also a very dramatic change in eating habits. You're talking about a dung beetle that has gone from being a scavenger, just sort of eating what's left behind on the forest floor, to being an active killer.
Well, how can researchers really be sure of that? I mean, it just sounds like this is something they hadn't observed before. Not that the dung beetle actually evolved.
Well, that's a good point. But what suggests that this is actually evolution in action is these particular features of this dung beetle, this serrated head, and also it has these sort of unique adaptations on its leg that literally allow it to rip the millipede apart. Those are things that are not seen in other dung beetles. And what they're saying is because of these adaptations, they would expect that there would be this whole new diversification of dung beetle species where you'd have this whole new group of dung beetles, not just this one species, turning into killers. And indeed, after this paper was published, the team has observed other species of dung beetles killing millipedes. So it suggests that this is something that may have started fairly recently and is just starting to explode among dung beetles.
Well, from the dietary habits of dung beetles to the dietary restrictions that may lead to improved memory. Eating less, Dave, will help me remember more?
That's the idea. And ever since the 1930s, there's been this theory that if we eat less, a lot less, and we're not just talking about cutting a few calories out of our diet, we're talking about trimming our caloric intake by as much as 30%, so severe restriction in diet, that this is healthier for our bodies, that it'll help us live longer, that it will reduce heart disease. And there's been some evidence for this in rodents and non-human primates. But the evidence in humans has been rather sketchy, and that's because it's really hard to do these studies, and people are usually dealing with small sample sizes. And so for this new study, the researchers tried to focus on a larger group of people. They were after this idea of, well, if eating less makes us healthier overall, does it also have cognitive benefits? And in this case, does it help improve memory? And for this study, they looked at 50 old people, people with an average age of about 60 years old, and all of them were overweight. And they divided them into three groups. And for one group, they said, for 3 months, eat 30% fewer calories than you usually do. And for another group, they said, pretty much keep the same diet, but eat more unsaturated fatty acids. And the reason they said this is because there have been other studies that have linked unsaturated fatty acids to cognitive improvements.
Found in things like salmon and olives, right?
Exactly. And for the final group, they said, don't do anything. This is our control group, and just keep on eating and living like you have been otherwise. And so after 3 months, they asked these participants to take a memory test. And this was basically just trying to remember a series of words. And the participants had taken the same memory test before they started their diets. And what they found is that the people who cut their calories by 30% performed 20% better on the memory test than the other two groups. In fact, the other two groups really showed no improvement at all.
It sounds like the confounding factor here might be that the people were overweight, so now they were actually eating maybe more about what they ought to be eating.
Well, that's one point that an expert raised when commenting on the study, was that overweight people tend to have a whole series of other problems. And one of those problems is sleep apnea. This is problems when you're sleeping, and that itself can contribute to cognitive problems. So if it could be that these people are just improving their memory because they're eliminating some of the debilitating factors of being overweight, not because cutting calories itself has any sort of impact on cognitive function. But the bottom line is, the researchers say this is just a first step. You know, more studies like these are needed to really determine whether there is this link between severe calorie reduction and improvements in memory, or even improvements in longevity. The important message being that moderation in lifestyle, especially dietary lifestyle, can be beneficial for our mental activities.
Well, from how dietary lifestyle potentially impacts our mental activities to how the Triceratops used its head, what was the real function of the horns on the Triceratops' head?
Well, Rob, if you've seen any of those old black and white movies that show dinosaurs fighting, one thing they often show is the Triceratops, which has these very dramatic horns. It's got this horn coming out of its nose, and it's got these two horns above its eyebrows, and it's busy goring a Tyrannosaurus Rex or even butting heads with another Triceratops. And those early movies were sort of based on the idea that Triceratops use their horns the same way we think of animals like deer and mountain goats using their horns. In other words, to fight each other, maybe for territory, for mates, or whatever. But over the years, that idea has taken a hit. Paleontologists have looked at other animals that have displays, like even like peacocks, and they've said, maybe the horns were just for display. You know, some animals use various body parts not to fight, but to show, hey, I'm very healthy or I'm very fit. And especially for males, it's a way to prove to females that they're a good mate. So they said, well, maybe these horns weren't used for battle at all. Maybe they just had much more symbolic purpose.
So what evidence did the researchers consider in this study?
Well, the researchers wanted to be really comprehensive in this study, and they looked at 400 fossilized skulls. And some of these were from Triceratops, but some of them were from another horned dinosaur called Centrosaurus. And Centrosaurus also has three horns, but its nose horn was much bigger than the one on Triceratops, and the horns above its eyes were smaller, so it looked a bit more like a rhinoceros than Triceratops did. And the reason the team compared these two dinosaurs is they figured, well, because of the way Centrosaurus is built, it probably didn't have the head-to-head combat that some people have associated with Triceratops. Maybe it was more involved with maybe doing body blows or something like that. And indeed, what they found when they looked at the Triceratops skulls was they found a lot of fractures and lesions around this crest, actually, which is called a frill, which is sort of this almost armor-like thing Triceratops have that extends behind their head. And they were finding a lot of damage on that. And that suggests that the Triceratops were using their heads a lot for combat, likely using their horns to fight other Triceratops or other dinosaurs. Whereas the Centrosaurus didn't really show this type of damage, which was a good control for a Triceratops, because it said, you know, just because you have horns doesn't mean, you know, you're necessarily using them for battle. And so overall, what this team's concluding is that it looks like these early filmmakers were right. It looks like the Triceratops were actually using their horns as weapons and not necessarily as show, although they are open to the possibility that the horns had what they call sort of a Swiss Army-like function, where they may have been used for battle, but they may have also been used for display, especially for male Triceratops, to woo mates.
Well, that's good that they did the comparison, but what about puncture marks or evidence that the Triceratops was fighting other animals or indeed other Triceratops?
Well, that's a good point. And it was a point actually raised by Jack Horner, who's one of the world's most famous paleontologists. He's actually the paleontologist that advised the special effects guys on the Jurassic Park movies. And what he said is he really would expect that if these horns were being used as weapons, you should be seeing a lot more puncture marks in these fossilized skulls, which the researchers aren't really seeing. So at least for him, he's not completely sold on this idea that these horns were primarily used for battle. And that's certainly a criticism this team is keeping in mind. But their next step is to look at even more fossilized skeletons. And they actually want to look at T-Rexes to see, do they have damage on their ribs, perhaps damaged from a Triceratops horn, which would be even more evidence that the Triceratops were using their horns for battle.
Okay, well, thanks, Dave.
Thanks, Rob.
So what other stories are you looking into for Science Now or on the policy blog, Science Insider?
Well, Rob, on Science Now, we're looking into a story about geoengineering of the ocean. And this involves this idea of throwing iron actually into the ocean as a way to increase phytoplankton blooms and draw CO2 out of the atmosphere. It's very controversial, and there's been some new studies suggesting how efficacious it might be. And on the policy blog, we're following President Obama's first days in office. What is he saying about science? What are his advisors saying about science? And we're also tracking some science developments abroad. There's a big brew actually happening in France right now between President Sarkozy and French scientists about the future of science in that country. So definitely check out Science Now for our research findings and the policy blog for everything you ever wanted to know about science policy.
David Grimm is the editor of Science Now, the online daily news site of science. You can check out the latest science news, plus find a link to our policy blog, Science Insider, at sciencenow.sciencemag.org.